Hey, what's up everybody, and welcome back to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and this episode is Q&A number 121. First, a piece of house cleaning item. I am currently running a That Triathlon Show survey to learn more about how I can improve the podcast and make it better for you as a listener. So it would mean a huge deal to me if you would take a few minutes to fill out the survey. I have a link to it in the episode description, and you can also find it directly on scientifictriathlon.com in the menu bar under the podcast tab. You can also go directly to the URL scientifictriathlon.com/survey, and I will direct you straight to the survey. More than 250 people have already filled it out since I sent it to the email list of Scientific Triathlon about a week ago, so I am extremely appreciative of that. Thank you very much to all of you that have already answered the survey, and to everybody that will do it following this announcement. And as usual, a big thank you also to our sponsors, Roka, that you can find on roka.com. Roka have an industry-leading design and development team that have developed some of the fastest triathlon gear on the planet and some of the best, crispest, and most well-designed eyewear on the planet as well. So Roka have their focus on both of those categories, triathlon gear and equipment, and also prescription eyeglasses and sunglasses. You can find both of them on roka.com, and you can get a 20% discount with the promo code that you can get on roka.com/TTS. And thank you to Sen8, our new sponsor, the swim trainer that helps triathletes improve their swim power and technique at home, even when pools are closed or you don't have enough time to go to the pool. After the main question for today, I will actually include a mini interview with founder and CEO Victor Jarland and head coach and pro triathlete Kieran Linders. You can get a 20% discount on the swim trainer on sen8swimtrainer.com/TTS. And this discount takes the cost of the trainer to 127 British pounds. So we're talking an investment similar to a pair of running shoes, not something outlandish at all. But more to follow later in this episode on the Sen8 swim trainer. But now let's get into today's question, which is from Simon in Australia. Simon writes, "Hi Michael, I've been listening to your show a lot lately, and although it's interesting and enjoyable, I find it depressing when I hear you and your guests talk about time for training per week for age group athletes. 10 hours plus seems to be the norm for age group triathletes, but I think even 8 hours a week is a huge time investment considering the average person probably visits the gym 3 times per week for 45 minutes. I am currently training 4 to 6 hours per week. I am a 40-year-old male in middle management working 40 to 45 hours per week. I cycle to work, but I don't count that as training because it takes me 10 to 20 minutes. I have a partner, a young child, and an energetic dog. We moved from the UK to Australia, so we have no support network to help out with childcare. I'm new to triathlon with my first race booked in for April 2021, but fitness has always been part of my life. My recent VO2 max test was 59 milliliters per kilogram per minute. My question is, do you think I am wasting my time with triathlon training 4 to 6 hours per week? I'm generally doing 2 to 3 swims, 2 rides, and 2 to 3 runs, and 2 strength workouts a week. I feel like I'm doing a lot, but then I listened to interviews like the one with Mike Ritchie on episode 98, and he talked about beginner triathletes starting out with 3 sessions of each sport and some strength or mobility work. Again, I wonder, who are these people that as beginners start doing 9 workouts a week? A side note to this question is training the 80-20 method, training per the 80-20 method with 4 to 6 hours per week of training time. I've heard you say it's not the best for time crunch athlete, but that doing some low intensity is still very important. Should I train 1 session for each discipline at a low intensity and the other at a moderate intensity? This would shift significantly from 80-20, but maybe I don't have enough time for all of the easy training in an 80-20 principle. Best regards, Simon." Thank you, Simon, for the question. It is a really, really great one. And it's actually, surprisingly, I would say, not one that I get that often. But I'm quite certain that many people listening to the podcast have the exact same question as you do. Because you are quite right, very often the interviews and Q&A episodes are kind of framed for better or for worse from the context of an athlete having, let's say, around 10 hours or even more perhaps to train each week. But although I don't have any stats to back this up with, I think that on average, triathletes across the world, when we count all triathletes, train significantly less than that. Maybe they would be in the 7 to 8 hour region per week, with, of course, significant variations on both sides. But the number of athletes doing, let's say, 12 plus hours of training, I would think is in a clear minority. The reason that despite that, this is what I tend to cover the most on this podcast is simply that the majority of the listeners are of this podcast are in that minority of training at a higher weekly volume. So, for example, in the survey that I'm running currently and that I just mentioned before, of 258 responses at the moment of writing, 86% of respondents categorize themselves as intermediate or advanced athletes, and only 14% as beginner athletes. And 62% have 70.3 racing or Ironman distance racing as their preferred distance. And the average experience in terms of years in the sport is 7.2 years. Of course, this is also a big positive feedback loop in a way. More content catering to intermediate and advanced athletes means that more and more of that demographic will find and enjoy the podcast, but maybe less beginners will. On the other hand, knowing the profile of the typical listener, making a lot of beginner content is, to be quite frank, quite a risk to do in that it might make the biggest listener group of the show lose interest in it. So what I do want to mention here is that I made a whole beginner tips podcast series a couple of years ago, but that is still relevant to this day. So I think I had some 37 episodes that catered to beginners, and they were called Beginner Tips 1 through 37. So you can find them on scientifictriathlon.com or in the archives in your podcast app for that triathlon show. Maybe one day I will revise that episode series, but for now, I would highly recommend beginners to start listening there, because I am very pleased with how that series turned out. Anyway, just to throw it out there, there are even days when I'm even thinking of starting an entirely separate new podcast focusing only on beginner triathletes. That's still something that I don't quite have time for at the moment, unfortunately, but it's an idea that I have and that may happen one of these days. All that to say is that I fully understand and agree with your concerns that a lot of content is not as catered to beginners as it could be, and definitely might seem daunting and intimidating. And really, for me, figuring out the right balance of the levels of content to make or the level of athletes to cater to is a big challenge, considering that so many of the listeners are athletes that train more, and they listen to TTS specifically because it's one of few podcasts that cater to their needs. But at the same time, all levels of triathletes are obviously just as important, and not everybody should aim to train 10 or 15 hours per week and go to Kona and all of that, because that's not what triathlon is about. Triathlon is about having fun, having great experiences, meeting like-minded people, getting physical activity in an enjoyable way, and countless other reasons not related directly to performance or how much you can and should train. So here's a call to action to all beginners and time-crunched athletes listening. Do take that survey that I mentioned. scientifictriathlon.com/survey will take you directly there. And please leave your feedback in the survey, because that will definitely help make this podcast as good as possible for hopefully all different athlete demographics. But now, Simon, back to your question specifically. Sorry for that long ramble, but I do think that context might be good and interesting for not just you, but for everybody to hear. So you are absolutely not wasting your time by training 4 to 6 hours per week. I'll give you a couple of examples to prove this point. First, the beginner sprint triathlon plan that I have for sale on scientifictriathlon.com, the average training time in that plan is 4 hours per week. And that is across 2 swims, 2 bikes, and 2 runs. It doesn't contain the strength training, though. That will vary based on the individual a bit. But for swimming, biking, and running, 4 hours is what I have in that plan as a recommendation. For the beginner Olympic plan, the average training time per week, swim, biking, and running, is 5 hours per week. And again, 2 swims, 2 bikes, and 2 runs. If we go to the beginner 70.3 plan. However, we do take a step up to an average of 8 hours per training. But keep in mind, that is in the last 16 weeks before the race. So let's say you have a goal 70.3 race half a year, 26 weeks from now. Then you could absolutely go about your training at a normal 4 to 6 hour per week range for the first 10 weeks and only ramp up training gradually in the last 16 weeks as the race is getting closer. And the same principle would apply for even for a race like an Ironman. But also keep in mind with that 8 hour per week example for a beginner 70.3 plan is that with that plan, although it's not always the case, I kind of have the assumption that most people that are following that plan have done a sprint or Olympic triathlon before, so they're not training for their first triathlon, even though some people have done that successfully with that plan, so it's absolutely doable. But generally speaking, it's catered to athletes that have at least a few months of experience in triathlon and they have done their first race at some point previously. But let's take another example, completely unrelated to quite unrelated to triathlon, but it's still a very interesting topic that I'm quite passionate about, which is physical activity for health and well-being. And if we look at the WHO recommendations for adults aged 18 to 64, the recommendations state that adults aged 18 to 64 years should do at least 150 to 300 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic physical activity per week, or at least 75 to 150 minutes of vigorous intensity aerobic physical activity per week. They should also do muscle strengthening activities at moderate or greater intensity that involve all major muscle groups on 2 or more days a week, as these provide additional health benefits. Then there are some other points. To help, the final point here is quite important. To help reduce the detrimental effects of high levels of sedentary behavior on health, all adults and older adults should aim to do more than the recommended levels of moderate to vigorous intensity physical activity. So 150 to 300 minutes of moderate intensity, and when WHO states moderate, it's actually what we in the scientific literature, for example, around endurance training, would refer to as low-intensity training. You could call it training in the moderate domain, not to get hung up on the terminology here. But basically, that's just going out for an easy run or a steady run or a steady bike ride, but not doing anything specific, not doing a tempo workout or a threshold workout or some intervals or anything like that. So anyway, 150 to 300 minutes of that type of training translates to 2.5 to 5 hours per week. So with you being in the 4 to 6 hour per week range, you are already in the upper end or even a bit higher than the minimum recommended amount of physical activity according to WHO. And this means that because for many, triathlon training is a vehicle for health and general fitness, you're already ticking that box easily. So it is absolutely enough if one of the main reasons for doing triathlon is that health and fitness aspect. From a performance perspective, are you going to get as good results in triathlon if you're training 4 to 6 hours per week versus 8 to 12 hours per week? Most likely, no, you are not. But then again, you also cannot force volume into just any life circumstances. That's not possible. Training 8 to 12 hours per week, but that done at the expense of getting adequate sleep, for example, would mean that maybe you would in the short term see performance improvements. In the long term, it's doubtful. And for sure, from a general health perspective, that increase in training volume would still be a massive, massive negative because of the lack of sleep in this particular example. So what it comes down to with regard to answering the question of if you are wasting your time or not is, what is your reason for doing triathlon? If you do triathlon for the sole purpose of qualifying for Kona, for example, then yes, I would say that with 4 to 6 hours of training per week, you're probably wasting your time. But if some of your main reasons for doing triathlon include general health and fitness, getting at least a minimum required physical activity done in a way that is enjoyable to you, getting to enjoy the challenge of training for something you've never done before and figure out if you can do it, how you can do it, and countless other reasons that I'm sure one can have for doing triathlon, then you're not wasting your time. So that is worth a bit of time for introspection and thinking about what is the reason that you're in triathlon in the first place? And that can make you come up with the answer yourself. Are you wasting your time or not? Now, I also realized that when asking that question, you may not have meant wasting your time quite as literally as I just answered it. Maybe you meant, is it possible to improve as a triathlete on 4 to 6 hours per week from your current level? So let's discuss that question a little bit. First, this will naturally depend on the ability level of the athlete. So somebody who has been training 10 to 15 hours per week for a couple of years is most likely not going to improve on 46 hours per week, unless before they were overtraining. But that is an exception that I think we can ignore for the purposes of this question. For someone like you, who is new to the sport, on the other hand, I would say that you can definitely improve on 46 hours per week. This is despite the fact that in terms of your personal starting fitness level, based on your VO2 max of 59, you are actually at a really, really high fitness level already. But for sure, I would say that you will keep improving for quite a while, doing 4 to 6 hours of training per week. The big question is, for how long can you keep improving? And that is impossible to answer. You'll only really know it when you get to a plateau and stop improving. Maybe it takes 1 year, maybe two, maybe even three. It's hard to say, but I would expect you to have at least 1 year of improvement, more likely 2 years of good improvements, even on a fixed volume of 4 to 6 hours per week. And what that means is that you can actually really be relaxed and not feel any pressure about having to increase volume, because you're just getting started. The bar for how much training you have to do to improve is quite low at this point in time. It will, over time, if you're in the sport for years, it will go up and up and up, and it will be harder and harder to improve. Of course, not all of that is, the answer is not always increased volume, but that is one of the main answers that typically you will have to, one of the tools you'll have to use to reach that next level. But you don't, at this point, need to, you know, clear the bar by a mile. You just have to go over it by just enough. And when the time comes and you can't clear it anymore, when you've stopped improving, then you need to assess, what are your goals and priorities? Is improving triathlon performance important to you? If that is the case, you'll probably need to increase your volume, but that point is not right here and right now. When you're just getting started, it's somewhere down the line. And I should also mention that what race you're training for plays a role. I alluded to this already with the examples of the training plans that I have created. I would argue that you, for example, with a VO2 max of 59, you could absolutely do a 7.3 race on your training volume of 46 hours per week. But I would also say that it might not be as enjoyable as the experience would be if you have a bit more time to train and get some of the longer training in, get your body better prepared for a long day out. So as a coach, if I was coaching you, I would encourage you to, at least for the last 2 months, ideally 3 or 4 months, increase volume a little bit beyond that to the kind of 6 to 8 hour range or so at the very least. But that could be for a limited amount of time. But also, keep in mind what I already said. You could do a 7.3 race on that volume. It's just that I think that you would have a better, more enjoyable experience for a long race with slightly more volume in you. Also, another example of what race distance you do playing a role in how much training you should do, or how much training you could benefit from more specifically. Both sprint and Olympic distance triathlons are perfectly appropriate distances for you with your current training volume, but I would argue that you will plateau your performances at the Olympic distance before you plateau your performances at the sprint distance, because you won't be able to as well meet the event demands for an Olympic distance because of your limited training time, the way that you can for a sprint, which is a more intense and shorter event. In terms of the number of sessions, I think what you're doing with the 2/3 swims and runs and 2 bikes is actually a lot already. And I would generally say for beginners that 2 swims, 2 bikes, and 2 runs is absolutely perfect if they have a fairly standard beginner profile. Strength and conditioning depends a bit on time and facilities available, but what you're doing with 2 sessions of strength and conditioning is fantastic. So kudos for that as well. For somebody completely new to structured sport, I would actually advise against doing any more than two swims, bikes, and runs for the first couple of months at least. It's a different story if you have a background in a sport, especially in endurance sport, but even in something like football or ice hockey or other team sports, whatever it may be, then you can quite often train more because you're used to training, even if the training is different. And for endurance athletes, for sure, you can jump in as a beginner triathlete and do more training, even though I would do things like limiting the running training at the beginning for people that are not used to running. But anyway, people that come to triathlon from background in other sports, they also tend to have some more higher goals sooner. Not to say that that's better necessarily, but quite often I tend to see that these athletes want to complete a 70.3 race as their first triathlon, and that race is in 3 or 4 months. So when that is the case, then your hand is also forced a little bit as a coach to have them train a bit more. And that is maybe a scenario that Mike Ritchie, that you mentioned, has experienced, I would imagine. So that might be a reason that he stated 3 swims, bikes, and runs, even for beginner athletes as an example. I'm perhaps getting slightly sidetracked already, but actually now that I think of it, even with athletes that have a background in training, whether it's, for example, football or something more similar to triathlon like cycling or swimming, even then, I would start with usually 2 swims, 2 bikes, and 2 runs. Except if they are a cyclist, then they could be doing a bit more cycling because they usually want to do that. But 2 workouts per week in the other disciplines that they're not used to. And if they're not from an endurance sport background, then 2 workouts of each discipline is what I would start them out. But I would pretty quickly increase the frequency if they have that background and they have the goals that warrant that increase, which is different from somebody who's completely new to structured training. But anyway, for most beginners, that is not something that I would do. Most beginners that don't have a background in structured training would be well off starting with 2 swims, bikes, and runs per week. That is pretty much what I would determined to be a good dose. You will improve a lot as a beginner with that amount of training. You will have a low risk of injury and overtraining. It is simply good for all intents and purposes. So I see little reason to divert from that model too often. Now, to the question on 80-20 or polarized training, you wrote, "I've heard you say it's not the best for time-crunched athletes, but doing some low intensity is still very important. Should I train one session for each sport at low intensity and the other at moderate intensity?" So you are correct. I have said that for time-crunched athletes, I don't think that a strict 80-20 approach or a polarized approach, just a quick one-sentence summary for listeners that don't know what this means. This means doing a large majority of your training, let's say 80% for simplicity, at a low intensity, and the rest can be, in a polarized approach, it would be at a high intensity, so not really a lot of moderate training, a minimal amount of moderate intensity training, and you would either go easy or you would go hard. 80-20 is a bit more flexible in that the 20% of training can be either moderate or hard. But yes, you're correct. I have said and I do not think that 80-20 or polarized training is a great approach for time-crunched athletes. Not that I think that anybody should follow a strict prescriptive formula for exactly how much low intensity or high intensity training you should be doing, but actually for high volume athletes and even moderate volume athletes, it ends up working pretty nicely around those numbers, even though the numbers should never be the goal themselves. And this is something I've discussed multiple times before, so I won't go into detail around that. But basically, you would never make a training plan with the goal of, okay, for this week, I need to make sure that 80% is low intensity and 20% high intensity, and then fit the workouts around that. That's not the mindset you have when creating a training plan. Either way, the problem with that arises in particular for more time-crunched athletes is that you are training less. So you can actually compensate a little bit with more, relatively speaking, more high intensity. So a lower relative proportion of your training can be at a lower intensity because you are at a low risk of getting too much fatigue, of overtraining, of injury because of the lower training volume. And training volume is a big factor behind all of those things. Also, I should say that for athletes training at a very high volume, what is very important is that a lot of the low-intensity training is actually really, really easy as opposed to what we might call steady endurance. So, for example, in a five-zone system, a time-crunch athlete I would almost never prescribe pure zone one workouts to. I might prescribe workouts that have a large range of options from which the athlete can choose, like so it could cover both zone one and zone two. And depending on how the athlete feels, they might go in zone two or in zone one. But I would never prescribe, almost never prescribe a workout that is strictly in zone one the way that I do very often for high volume athletes, just to make sure that we keep the overall fatigue levels in check and the overall caloric demands in check and the overall a lot in check, training balance and making sure we're fresh for the really hard workouts. So it's not just that a time crunch athlete can have a higher relative amount of intensity in their training when training at a lower volume than their counterparts, but also they can do the low intensity training slightly higher in the low intensity range. So in a five zone model, you could be doing that training all in zone two as opposed to doing it in zone one, as long as you feel up for it on the day. But do adjust on the day based on how your body feels. On the day when you feel really fatigued, absolutely nothing wrong with going in zone one. And I also must emphasize that it's important to not overdo this point. And what happens then is that your endurance workouts turn into some kind of moderate intensity tempo training, and you're no longer practicing some of the key benefits gained from low intensity training, including not least fat oxidation. That's one of the key things that we get from those lower intensity workouts. So one of the best and easiest ways to confirm that the low intensity training is still low intensity enough is to do the talk test, which I've described before. But essentially, you can talk to yourself, state out loud a paragraph of text. For example, the Pledge of Allegiance has been used in validation studies in scientific research during your running or biking or whatever you're doing, not swimming probably, and see if you can do that without getting out of breath. Then you are at the low intensity level, so you're all good. I think that when you say that you suggest that you should be doing one low-intensity workout in each discipline per week, I agree with that. I would just add that it can also be possible to include some strides at the end of a run or some sprints in a swim like that or on the bike, as long as this is a relatively small part of the workout and for the most part it is either easy or steady endurance. But when you ask if the other workout in each discipline should be moderate intensity, I would make a little correction here and or counter suggestion and say that it should be moderate or high intensity. In a truly polarized model, as I said, it would be high intensity, but for triathlon purposes, we know that there is great value in moderate intensity workouts as well. So this is where training periodization comes in a bit. Over the course of a year, you should be getting in a good amount of both moderate and high intensity training. For a self-coached beginner athlete, I would say just keep things super simple. So, for example, focus on high intensity 1 week, and then the next week you focus on moderate intensity in those second workouts that are not low intensity. There are several different ways that you could go. That's not the only one, but that is one way that I think is very simple and easy to follow. So something like that would be good. And we're already getting very far into this podcast, so I'll just give a quick example of a moderate and a high intensity workout in each discipline for a beginner level athlete. So on the swim, you could do 10 times 50 meters with 20 seconds rest between each, and the intensity would be as hard as you can go, but sustain through the set. And a moderate intensity workout would be 45 times 300 meters with 1 minute rest, and the intensity would be pretty close to the best average pace you can hold for all of those intervals. But keep in mind, you should not be losing pace from the first to the last. You should be able to do the last interval as fast as the first one. So pacing is very important in those kinds of workouts. On the bike, you could do something like, for high intensity, 6 times 2 minutes with 2 minute recoveries, and you should go as hard as possible, best sustainable pace again. Versus a moderate workout could be a straight 20, 25, or 30 minute tempo ride at a moderate intensity. And then maybe you should feel at the end of the segment that you could have gone for 10 minutes more, but maybe not more than that. Or you could do something like 3 times 10 minutes of quite hard intensity with 5 minutes rest. And each of the 10 minutes should be at the same intensity again, but you should feel that you had a little bit left at the end of the workout, but maybe not that much left. And on the run, same thing as the bike, really. 6 times 2 minutes on, 2 minutes off would be a great high-intensity workout, and 3 times 10 minutes or 20 minutes straight tempo, those would be great options. So I hope this helps, Simon. Good luck with your training and your first race in April. And now let's play a short interview I did with two persons from the new podcast sponsor, Zen 8 Swim Trainer. Because they are a new sponsor to the podcast, I want to give you all a chance to get to know the company and their product a bit better with some more information than what can be conveyed just through the sponsorship slots at the beginning and end of the episodes. So here is the short interview introducing Zen 8 and the Zen 8 Swim Trainer. So I have Victor Jarland and Kieran Linders from Zen 8 Swim Trainer here with me. Welcome, guys. We can start with Victor, who's the founder and CEO. Can you explain what is the Zen 8 Swim Trainer and how does it work?
Yes. So nice to be here. And the Zen 8 Swim Trainer is a strength training tool for but designed for time-crunched athletes like myself. And doesn't always have the time to go to the pool. It's specifically designed to help the athletes develop swim-specific strength and technique.
Can you explain a little bit more about the backstory? You mentioned that you don't always have time to go to the pool. Is that where this idea to create the swim trainer came up?
Both, yes. Yeah, so when I started my first my first triathlon, I don't come from a swimming background myself, and love the idea of doing a triathlon. During my first triathlon, I completely panicked in the water, and I realized that I had not put enough time in the water or at the pool, and working full time in a busy ski resort and living at 2,000 meters above sea level, it was always tough to find both time and facilities to get my swim training in. And this is where the idea popped up of being able to do the swim training somehow and strength training at home. And this is where the idea was first launched. And earlier in 2020, when I got laid off work, we really took this idea into and made it a reality with the help from Kieran as well. We developed a product that is now on the market.
Yeah. And Kieran, why don't we move to you? Can you first just paint a little visual of what the product looks like, how it works, so the listeners have an idea of what it is we're talking about?
So the Zen 8 Indoor Swim Trainer is a product that is based off of using elastic cords, which are a go-to in my books in how to improve your swimming performance. And we use these cords with an inflatable swimming bench so that when you, first of all, that you can lie in a more natural position and you can... And because it's an inflatable bench, it has subtle imbalances. So you have to engage your core in order to stay in a good position. So you're not just lying on it and not activating specific muscles. You're really getting almost a full body workout, which compared to normal training methods, just such as using stretch cords by themselves, it doesn't allow for this.
Yeah, and I should mention as well that you're the head coach and product tester involved in product development in Zen 8, so I didn't mention that before, so the listeners get the full picture here. So you mentioned there that you engage the core much more than you would with, or you do engage the core, which you wouldn't with stretch cords. And Victor also talked about how this benefits people with that are time crunched or don't have good access to facilities. Obviously, the current pandemic is an example of not having access to facilities. Are there any other benefits or use cases that we should point out?
Yeah, 100%. The main thing that I love about the trainer is that as a triathlete and as a pro triathlete, it can be very difficult sometimes just to make pull times when it's a regular week. So if you're doing a run in the morning or a bike in the morning, sometimes you can get home and there's not the ability to go to the pool, even if a pool is operating normally, or even if it's a case of jumping in with your club. So what I would do in the past is I would come home and use stretch cords or other methods. But I found that standing up and being in a slouched position was making my hamstrings really sore and making my lower back sore. And when the swimming was totally taken away from the pandemic, I was trying to replicate sessions, and I actually picked up some injuries from doing my typical band work. So being able to lie down on the bench and be in a more specific position made sure that I wasn't overloading my legs, which were tired from other sessions. And it also meant that I was able to really work on a good high catch position and a really strong pull through without, you know, when I'm pulling through, hitting my legs or being at the wrong angle. So it really made it specific to what I was trying to do.
Why is it that you can work on a high catch? How does the swim trainer allow you to do that?
So there's a couple of ways in which it does this, but the first way, and one way that's been really picked up by people using the trainer is, first of all, you can actually see what you're doing with your arms. And sometimes in the pool, if you're wearing certain goggle lenses or just the water in itself, it can disrupt the natural view of what your arms are doing. So when you're on the trainer and you're looking at your high catch, you can actually see, well, my elbows are in the correct position, because you can see them in front of you and you can have a quick look and you can film yourself really easily. And that's one of the things that we've been doing is getting people to film what they're doing and send it in to us, and then we can have a look at it for them. And another reason as well is because you are lying in a natural position, if you're doing poor technique, you will actually graze the ground. So if you're not promoting proper technique, you will notice it because you'll get some physical feedback of either you pulling round wrong or you're dragging your arms along the floor. So rather in the pool where it's just a case of, you know, not getting a good catch and not really necessarily knowing what that feels like, this will give you some physical input. And I guess the last thing as well is because the bands offer a little bit more resistance than, say, the water, you can actually feel it more in your muscles. So rather in swimming, where if you don't get a good catch, you probably won't necessarily feel it and your arm just slips through, with the Zen 8 trainer, you can actually physically feel it because of the resistance of the bands.
Perfect. And how would you use it? How would you structure a training session? Would you, if you normally go to the pool and do 1 hour, 1 hour 15 minutes, or 1 hour 30 minutes, or 45 minutes, would you do a similar length session on the bench, or would you do something shorter? What's some tips there?
So there's a couple of ways I use the trainer. I think the first one, which is very quick, is that I like using it to help me warm up before every swim session that I do, or any sort of lifting session that I do. If it's going to be arm work, I find it's one of the best ways to just warm up and get me ready for those sessions. So for that sort of thing, I'm just doing, you know, 5-10 minutes just to get the activation and get ready to go. As in normal sessions, which is one thing that I've been doing at the moment because, you know, there's no access to the pools, I've been doing anywhere from a quick 20-minute session to get really good activation in the arms, all the way up to 45 minutes to an hour. So I've built myself up to do that, but most of the time I quite like doing short, sweet sessions because you find kind of if you've gone to 30 minutes or longer, you've got such good activation and your muscles are kind of so fatigued from doing the work that you don't really need to do much more than 25, 30 minutes. And that's coming from someone that races as a pro.
Yeah. And final question, this is something that I'm sure a lot of listeners are wondering now. How does using this swim trainer, the Zen 8 swim trainer, compare to just stretch cords? You already talked a little bit about that, but also to something like the Vasa swim trainer.
So just quickly going back over the stretch cords, you're in a more natural position, so you're not putting any more load on the legs that you don't need to. So that's just really good for triathletes in general, that, you know, we do a lot of work on our legs, so why stress them out any more than they need to be? Compared to something like the Vasa trainer, I mean, first of all, we've got the only swimming indoor trainer that actually has that flex on the bench. So you're not just lying down and it supporting you. You have to work on it. So you're constantly having to engage your core and your balance to keep on. And I guess the last thing as well is the Vasa trainer is a really high regarded training equipment, but I've always found that the access to get to it has been very difficult. I mean, I've been a swimmer for a long time and I've been a pro triathlete for a long time, and I've only ever used it once because it was a piece of equipment that was only kind of reserved for lab sort of environments because of the cost and the size of it. So I guess the Zenit trainer, where we have that slight edge, is that we can fold it up and put it into a cupboard or put it into your suitcase for travel, and it's at a lot more cost-effective price than some of the other methods, which you're looking at, you know, a few thousand pounds to get the basic models for.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's inflatable, so you can just shove it away in a really small package when not using it, if you want to, or for travel, as you mentioned. Victor, do you have any final words to the listeners? Maybe just tell us where we can find out more information about the trainer and how we can get our hands on one.
So we're on Instagram. We have quite a few, and even YouTube. If you search for Zenit Swim Trainer, you should be able to find us there. We do have, we're trying to do a lot of training videos showing how the product is working. Also, our website is Zenit with an 8, the number 8, ZenitSwimTrainer.com. And to let the listeners know who might be thinking about getting one, we are providing a free coaching plan with the trainer that Karen is working on, and we have some an exciting collaboration together with the BMC Pro Triathlon team, and we are working on a more in-depth coaching plan together with the team at BMC. So look out for that in the next few weeks.
All right, perfect. Thank you to both of you, Victor and Kieran. It was great to have you on and talk more about the Zenit Swim Trainer. And just to reiterate, the website where you can find out more information is ZenitSwimTrainer.com. And that's it for today's Q&A episode. I will link in the episode description to the survey that I mentioned. Please do remember to fill it out, the survey for that triathlon show. It will help me make the podcast better for you. I will also link to a couple of Q&A episodes that are related to the question we had today, especially Q&A number 32, training on 3 to 5 hours per week and how to get started with adding high intensity training to your program. Well, that first part, especially training on 3 to 5 hours per week, is where I lay out some structures for time crunch athletes. Q&A number 10 is also related, why 80-20 training is not the best way to train for time crunched age group athletes. So check those out. They will be in the episode description and, of course, on scientifictriathlon.com under the Q&A episodes tab. Keep sending in questions to michael@scientifictriathlon.com, and it's Michael with a K. And if you're interested in coaching, training plans, or training camps, check out scientifictriathlon.com and what we have to offer there. I'm also happy to answer any questions you have. Just email me and I'll get back to you. Thank you, finally, to our sponsors, Roka, that you can find on roka.com. Go and check out their wetsuits, trisuits, swimskins, goggles, high-performance eyewear, and prescription glasses and sunglasses, and get 20% off your order with the promo code that you can get on roka.com/TTS. And thank you to Zenit that you can find on zenitswimtrainer.com. Improve your technique, power, and stamina, even when pools are closed or when you don't have time to go to the pool, thanks to the unique Zenit swim bench design. you can get 20% off your swim trainer with the promo code that you can get on senatewimtrainer.com/TTS. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.